Thank you very much, Cheryl and Anne. I want to say again that you are doing it perfectly. You know, just keep doing what you're doing. You're doing it perfectly. I know, I've been there. So you're discovering what you need to discover, and you're just moving through it beautifully. Thank you. And I was listening to Anne. I almost forgot to pick out a song. I almost forgot to get prepared for my own teaching because I was so engrossed in listening to her experience of healing. It's beautiful to hear such raw honesty and sharing. But fortunately, in like the last couple of minutes that she was talking, I remembered I was up next. And so the song that I picked out, I quickly went and grabbed, was a song that I used to sing at the top of my lungs, you know, during that the early phase of the spiritual path when all of that self-hatred was coming up and yuckiness, you know, the way Anne described finding it was you don't matter. You know, that specific flavor. I always say the unworthiness guilt tendency has different flavors for different people. That specific flavor didn't come up for me. It was more like you're the scum of the earth. I'm sure you guys have heard me say that. You're just like, you're the lowest. You're the scum of the earth. Cheryl, I'm lower than trash is one of Jacqueline's flavors. Yeah. And Cheryl, the last 3 weeks in a row, it has entered my mind that maybe we should start recording and posting Anne's teaching. And what I wouldn't want to happen is for that to spoil your quality of your teaching. So if you think that we can record you and your quality will be just as raw, please email me and say yes if you think it's okay. All right. So Cheryl, let's start recording her next week. And I'll create a page so that we can post her teachings because it's superb, raw. You know, this is exactly, this is exactly what I did, Anne. It wasn't the sanctuary then, I was in ACIM Gather, but I used ACIM Gather to come in and talk about my healing process as it was happening. You know, again, you know what dyads are. I think it had the same effect as a dyad to just come in here and share honestly and openly and rawly while people were listening. Now, I didn't have the same advantage that you have and that the whole time I was sharing, I had people attacking me. So I was also simultaneously learning not to be affected by the mean comments on the board. You're not going to have to go through that. But actually, I found that to be helpful, too. But I think, in all honesty, this is why people began to be attracted to me as a sharer, I'll say, is because they heard the honesty in the sharing, right? It wasn't spiritual ego just coming in here and parroting what I had read in some book. You know, so many people just kind of stay on the surface of things, is the way Peace Pilgrim put it. They stay on the surface of things. And I was willing to go in. And that's what you're doing too. And it's really helpful for people to hear that. So I'll create a page. I'll notify Ken and Cheryl about that page, and next week we'll begin posting your recordings because they're just lovely. All right, so as I was saying, the song I picked out is a song that I used to sing at the top of my lungs when I was going through this same kind of stage that Anne is in, discovering the types of things that Anne is discovering, feeling the types of feelings that Anne was feeling, and this song was a comfort to me. So I remember where I worked. I worked at Private Healthcare Systems in Waltham, Massachusetts at the time. And right behind where we worked, there was like this kind of rural area, right in the middle of all the hubbub. But this little area was rural. And I could walk, you know, take a walk at lunch and there would be nobody around. And I would just sing to the trees, to the top of my lungs, this song. Here we go. This is by Resta Burnham, and it is called I Am Willing. No, actually, it's called Are You Willing? That's the name of the song, Are You Willing?
Are you willing to be beautiful and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be beautiful and shine my love. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be beautiful and shine my love. Are you willing to be gentle and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be gentle and shine my love. Gentle, gentle, gentle in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be gentle and shine my love. Are you willing to be joyful and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be joyful and shine my love. Joyful, joyful, joyful in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be joyful and shine my love. Are you willing to be peaceful and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be peaceful and shine my love. Peaceful, peaceful, peaceful in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be peaceful and shine my love. Are you willing to be helpful and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be helpful and shine my love. Helpful, helpful, helpful in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be helpful and shine my love. Are you willing to be worthy and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be worthy and shine my love. Worthy, worthy, worthy in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be worthy and shine my love. Are you willing to be giving and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be giving and shine my love. Giving, giving, giving in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be giving and shine my love. Are you willing to be open and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be open and shine my love. Open, open, open in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be open and shine my love. Are you willing to be trusting and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be trusting and shine my love. Trusting, trusting, trusting in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be trusting and shine my love. Are you willing to be radiant and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be radiant and shine my love. Radiant, radiant, radiant in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be radiant and shine my love. Are you willing to be beautiful and shine your love? Yes, I'm willing to be beautiful and shine my love. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful in Christ. Yes, I'm willing to be beautiful and shine my love.
Yeah, I love that. I love that song. I used to listen to it all the time. Now I don't have the same need, but it's nice to hear it again. All right, so we are here for the guiding light now. And I'm going to be sharing from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, beginning on page 32, with question number 5. What is the authority for saying that the entire moving and unmoving worlds depend upon one's self? Here is the answer. The self means the embodied being. It is only after the energy, which was latent in the state of deep sleep, emerges with the idea of I, that all objects are experienced. The self is present and all perceptions as the perceiver. There are no objects to be seen when the I is absent. For all these reasons, it may undoubtedly be said that everything comes out of the self and goes back to the self. So, again, the question was, what is the authority for saying that the entire moving and unmoving worlds depend upon one's self? And the very first sentence of the answer, the self means the embodied being, I think can be misunderstood. The self, the word self in this sentence is a capital S. The self means the embodied being. I think that for probably almost everybody, if they read something like that, they immediately think of me, you know, like just this me, just Regina in my case. And so then the sentence becomes very confusing because he says the self with a capital S means the embodied being. And he's also talking about how everything comes from the self and goes back in the self. And, you know, that could give me the false perception that I, Regina, am the only thing real here, and that everything else is literally like a dream at night, does not exist. Of course, that totally disregards your I am-ness. It totally disregards your presence. It's a, you could call it an egocentric way of understanding what I am. And many people arrive at this conclusion because the egocentric way of seeing is how they see. And therefore, because that's the only way of seeing that they know, it's the only way of understanding that they have. A Course in Miracles calls this level confusion. But it's very important to realize that I am, and in this sentence I can also say that we are, consciousness itself. And consciousness itself could be said to have an unmanifest and a manifest state. Now, if I am enlightened, like Ramana Maharshi, and I look at you and I am speaking to you, I have no confusion in my mind that you are that small individual body. I know you as consciousness. So when I speak to you, I am speaking to consciousness, not to a small individual person. So if I am speaking to consciousness and I say the self means the embodied being, what I am saying to consciousness is I'm referring to your manifested state. The self represents your manifested state, not your unmanifested state. Now that self, that manifested state of self, includes all sentient beings. And I always have to look up the word sentient, like every time I use it. I know that that's the correct word to use, but there's something about the word sentient that will not hold on in my head. So sentient is able to perceive or feel things. All right, that's sentient, able to perceive or feel things. So sentient would basically have some type of senses, but not necessarily human senses. In fact, it is said that even a rock is actually a sentient being. And as you all know, I experienced myself once as an apple, and the apple was a sentient being. It was able to perceive and feel things, not in the same way that a human does. Right? It wasn't human sentience, but it was still sentience. So the self is all sentient beings. And so this individual of Regina could drop dead today. And the world's going to continue. Because the world wasn't dependent on this individual of Regina. The world is dependent on the self in manifest form, which is all sentient beings. Which means, you know, which means as long as anyone is seen through the mind, there will be a world, right? Because that's still the self seen through that mind. So Ramana Maharshi says, the self means the embodied being. And again, now we know clearly he's not talking about an individual. He's not talking about Regina, right? He's talking about the self through all sentient beings. The self means the embodied being. It is only after the energy, which was latent in the state of deep sleep, emerges with the idea of I, that all objects are experienced. So now what he's doing is he's bringing an example into the individual. He's attempting to help the individual understand. Again, this is merely an example. This is not the reality of it. And, you know, people sometimes get confused when they take this example too literally. But what he's explaining to the person is when you were in deep sleep, when you were not conscious, you did not perceive a world. Well, what that is synonymous with is when consciousness is in unmanifest form, it does not perceive a world. Only when consciousness is in manifest form is a world perceived. One way that this is sometimes explained, and I think, I don't remember if this is in A Course in Miracles or if it was just Ken Wapnick that used to say this, I don't remember. But the saying was, God does not even know that you are here. God, in that sentence, represents unmanifest awareness, unmanifest isness. Consciousness, when manifest, perceives a world. So he's likening it to when we're in the state of deep sleep, we do not perceive a world. Yet when we are in a state of deep sleep, and again, he's not going that far in this particular example, but when you're in a state of deep sleep, awareness is still present, however. And this would be likened to the awareness of God. How do you know that awareness is still present? As I heard Floyd Henderson say recently, if I walked into your bedroom while you were sleeping and I shouted your name real loud, you'd wake up. Because although you are not conscious, subject-object conscious, you remain aware. And so he says the self means, excuse me, a little nut from my my little energy bar that I just had. One moment. Must have been in the teeth somewhere and started moving into the throat. The self means the embodied being. It is only after the energy, which was latent in the state of deep sleep, emerges with the idea of I, that all objects are experienced. So unmanifest awareness is not aware of objects. Manifest awareness is aware of objects. And I personally, you know, not everybody does what I do. I have noticed some people that do this in the same way that I do it. Bentinho Massaro is one person that does it in the same way I do it. Floyd Henderson is another person that does it in the same way I do it. I divide, for the sake of clarity. It obviously would be a false division. But I divide consciousness and awareness. And I use different words. I refer to the unmanifest awareness that is not aware of anything, you know, not aware, and has no subject-object awareness, the unmanifest awareness, as awareness. And I refer to the manifest awareness, which has subject-object awareness, as consciousness. I just use different words for clarity purposes. So the way that I would say this, if I was speaking, is I would say that once consciousness emerges, right, then there is a world. Consciousness can also be called the sense of self or the sense of being, the sense of existing, the I am presence. Right? Once that emerges, then there is a world. But when that is unmanifest, in its dormant state, just pure awareness, there is no world. Ramana Maharshi, based on what we looked at last week, has awakened beyond consciousness, beyond the I am presence, beyond the sense of self or sense of existence, to pure awareness. And therefore, Ramana Maharshi, or what we call Ramana Maharshi, does not see a world. And how do we know this is true? Because this is what was explained to us last week when he talked about the state that resembles inactive deep sleep, the state with no external awareness, absorption in oneself without concepts, right? We spent a lot of time on that last week. So what's interesting about this unmanifest energy, not anything that I can certainly understand or explain, nor would I expect anybody to be able to understand it or explain it with the mind. But what's interesting about this unmanifest energy, I don't even know how to go with this, is that a manifestation can appear. Again, like we would look at the body of Ramana Maharshi and say, you know, but there's Ramana Maharshi. Or we would look at Nisargadatta and say, but surely you're aware of the world around you, right? But the awareness that speaks through that body has awakened beyond consciousness, and it does not experience subject, object, human consciousness as we do. Therefore, to it, there is no world. There's only reality. It can see consciousness, but it does not see differences, where we see differences and are unaware of consciousness. And those differences we call the world. So what is the authority for saying that the entire moving and unmoving worlds depend upon oneself? The self means the embodied being or manifest consciousness. It is only after the energy, which was latent in the state of deep sleep, emerges with the idea of I, right? The I am presence, the I am something, the right, the sense of self, right? It's only after the energy which was latent in the state of deep sleep emerges with the idea of I that all objects are experienced. The self is present in all perceptions as the perceiver. So another way to say this is consciousness is present in all perceptions as the perceiver. And we don't have to think about this. We can test this right now. Look at any object in the room where you are. This is some place where I chose not to go last night because, again, I didn't know how to explain it and I wasn't sure everybody is ready for it. Although I have a strong sense of it now, so let me do my best. The sentence is, the self or consciousness is present in all perceptions as the perceiver. If you look at anything right now, and it, go ahead and let's do it this way. Let's do it in an elementary way. Go ahead and look at something. And notice, just notice that you see the something that you're looking at. And then just shift your attention a little bit so that although your eyes are still staring at the object, that your attention is on the seeing. You can't see seeing, like you can see the object, but you can be aware of seeing. And then just close your eyes for a moment. Seeing is now gone. The object, of course, is gone. But awareness is present. Or we'll call it consciousness. Consciousness is present. So put your attention just on the consciousness with your eyes closed. Just be aware that you are aware. Conscious that you are conscious. Now keeping your attention to the best of your ability on awareness, consciousness, open your eyes, keep your attention on consciousness, and notice they see the object again. You see the object, but your attention is on consciousness. I don't know how to say this next sentence. Keep your attention on consciousness with your eyes open. Consciousness is the foreground of your experience. Although you see the object, if your attention is on consciousness, consciousness is the foreground of your experience. It would also be proper to say that consciousness is fundamental to your experience. Without consciousness, there would be no experience. Without consciousness, there would be no seeing of this object. Close your eyes again. Just to refocus on consciousness. To get a strong sense of awareness. Strong sense of just being aware that you're aware. A strong sense of just being conscious that you're conscious. And open your eyes. Look at the object. Keep your attention on consciousness. And listen to this sentence. The self is present in all perceptions as the perceiver. With your attention on consciousness, regardless of what you are perceiving, you are aware of the fact that this sentence is true. The self is present in all perceptions as the perceiver. Ramana Maharshi continues, there are no objects to be seen when the eye is absent. So without this conscious presence that is perceiving the object, without the conscious presence, there is also no object. Now again, we're not talking about the individual here. Regina can die, and the world will continue to exist, because we're not talking about Regina's consciousness is required to see an object. We're talking about consciousness, and that consciousness shines equally through my eyes and my senses, as it does your eyes and your senses, and even Jamie, my dog, her eyes and her senses. The dinosaur's eyes and senses. Humanity is not even required. Humanity could destroy itself, and as long as the cockroaches survived and evolution continued, right? Then consciousness is still manifest, and the world can continue to evolve in whatever way it's going to after we destroy ourselves with nuclear war. Humanity is not required. Regina is not required. Consciousness is required for there to be an object. But that consciousness shines through your eyes and your senses right now. It also shines through my eyes and my senses right now. One consciousness. Manifest, perceiving a world. One consciousness. Manifest, perceiving a world. Okay, Kathy has a question. Would you then say awareness would be the background of consciousness as you use those terms? I have two answers for that question, Kathy. I think it depends on how far your background goes. Because what I have found is that my background can slip backwards even more. And the furthest back background that I have experienced, I've only experienced a few times now. It's my current endeavor to experience it more consistently, right? It's further back than the observer. It sees the observer. And what I suspect is when I slip back to that, when I get back to where I'm consistent at that level of background, I will find another background. So just how far back is infinite awareness, I cannot answer. But the direction to go is back, background, or within, some people describe it. Back or within, deeper, right? Yeah. Good. I think I answered the question then. That's the way. Yeah, that's the way. So the self means the embodied being. And we can even call the embodied being the planet here. Some people would argue, and they would be absolutely correct, that the planet itself is a sentient being. We don't need a cockroach. And if you look at the history of evolution, right, the history of evolution, the planet began, I'm not a scientist, I can't go far enough back in that, so I'm only going to go back as far as single-celled beings, right, single-celled organisms. But I believe that there actually was something even before that. So there wasn't anything that we think of as like an insect, not even an insect or a fish, right? But there was still sentience. There was still that ability for there to be form and for form to evolve through that sentience's experience with itself as form. So, you know, we think we're so great, humans. We think we're so great, but we're not. We're actually completely, as humans, we're completely unnecessary. The world is not dependent on Regina Donakers. The world is not even dependent on humanity. But it is dependent on consciousness. Manifest consciousness. So the self means the embodied being. It is only after the energy, which was latent in the state of deep sleep, emerges with the idea of I, and of course he's talking to a human here, but we're going to say a sense of beingness or a sense of existence for a creature or a rock or a plant that does not think like we do. There would not be the idea of I. There would be the sense of existence. The sense of existence, the sense of being, is the most fundamental. And that's not egotistical at that point. Gosh, this is so hard to talk about. It's not egotistical in the way that a human is egotistical, right? You know, an apple, a rock, a plant, you know, even a deer, cockroach cannot be egotistical in the way that a human is egotistical. But that sense of beingness, that sense of existence, is still temporary and one step away from the source, which doesn't have a sense of beingness or a sense of existence. So when that sense of beingness comes into being, then objects are experienced. It's consciousness experiencing itself as objects. So the self means the embodied being. It is only after the energy, which was latent in the state of deep sleep, emerges with the idea of I, that all objects are experienced. The self is present in all perceptions as the perceiver. There are no objects to be seen when the I is absent. Or we could say there are no objects to be seen when the sense of existence, the temporary manifested sense of existence, is absent. Now, some people fear this as death, and I think I'm just going to go ahead and address this right now. I used to fear this as death. When I first began to contemplate truth at the level at which it is being discussed right now, which, to be honest, most spiritual teachings don't go this far. Most spiritual teachings stop short of this level of contemplation. They go to consciousness, to manifest consciousness. They go to letting go of ego, to seeing I am the self and everything is me. And that's where the teachings stop. But that's not the end of the story or the end of the awakening, nor is it, of course, the beginning, because the beginning and the end are the same. And I discovered the truth beyond consciousness in May of 2012. Some of you may have heard me tell this story before. And what was really exciting to me was I found by accident on Facebook another individual who was discovering it at the exact same time that I was. And that was Bentinho. And I remember he was writing about it on Facebook groups. I wasn't writing about it. I was quietly contemplating it alone in my basement. But he was writing about it. And often what he would write, his words were almost exactly what were in my journal. Like, we were having the exact same discoveries at the exact same time. But what was interesting, when Bentinho was expressing it, his people began to cut him off. He began to get kicked out of Facebook groups. People began to say that he was crazy. And here I am sitting here having the exact same realization. So I knew he wasn't crazy. Since then, I've discovered, I've gone deeper into the teachings of Ramana Maharshi, deeper into the teachings of Nisargadatta Maharaj, and I found that they're talking about the same thing. I didn't know Nisargadatta much before this point, and I only knew Ramana as inner Ramana. So when I got to know Ramana Maharshi and I got to know Nisargadatta Maharaj, I found they were talking about the same thing. And then recently I found Bernadette Roberts and Floyd Henderson, and they are talking about the same thing. And I'm beginning to realize there are people who do know this. But it's not common everyday spiritual talk. And I think the reason, I'm guessing here, that it's not common everyday spiritual talk is because it's scary. Waking up to consciousness is cool. I am everything. But waking up beyond that sense of existence is scary. If I'm identified with beingness, existence, I amness, what am I without it? You know, the mind answers dead, but it's not true. The deeper you contemplate this, the more you realize it's not true. It can't be true. It's unmanifest, yes. It's unaware of itself or objects, yes. But it's not death. It's potent life. It's the source. It's the core of everything. To awaken to that is to know the truth from the source, from the core. It's unimaginable to the mind. It's unimaginable to me. It's something I know intuitively. And I use the word know instead of the word believe because it is know. It's not believe, it's know. K-N-O-W, know. It's know. I know it to be true. Even though I cannot imagine it. And so I become highly attracted only to teachers who point beyond consciousness. I often use teachers who point to consciousness because that's helpful. You know, when a person is still in the egotistical state, meaning, you know, I think all I am is this, well, then the state that they need to realize is the state of consciousness. I am consciousness. That's incredibly important. But it's not the core. It's not the source. It's not the beginning or the end of the story. And so something in me calls, my heart just rips wide open, it calls to that point that is not death. But to the mind it is. But it is not death, it's potent life. But back to this answer, I slightly digress. Yeah, Kathy is writing some things here. She says, from which flows all non-existent and existent potentials? Yes. That. It's what Jesus would have called Abba or Father. That is what I am. And therefore, that is what I long to realize and have not yet realized, although I do know it to a degree that most humans don't, that intuitive degree. on my desktop, I have a picture of Nisargadatta. Not that I'm fond of Nisargadatta's picture. You know, he has that little crazy look in his eyes. I prefer Ramana Maharshi's, you know, more devotional look. but I have a picture of Nisargadatta on my desktop, and the reason is because of what he says, what's quoted in the picture. The quote is, I am that which knows I am. That's the furthest background that I have found, and that's the background that I am currently striving for to become consistent. And from there, as I mentioned, I suspect there to be a further background. So as you could call it, it's what I perceive to be my next step. I am that which knows that I am. Most people are still reaching for the level of I am. Because they still think I am Sally, right? I am Sally, I am John, I am Bill, right? So they're reaching for I am. But when I am is realized and meditation continues, what we notice is that even I am can be seen. And we start saying, what sees this? And that background is the one I have slipped into a few times. Nothing consistent, only short glimpses. But you know, that's what happened when I began to become aware of I am. When I first became aware of the I am presence, I would slip into it momentarily and then not see it again for weeks, and then slip into it momentarily and then not see it again for weeks. So now it's that same phase with this further back background. And only after I achieve consistency at that will I be able to begin focusing further back, right? And Anna's asking, is that what you became aware of during our dyad in New Mexico? And the answer is yes, that was the first time. So let me go back to this answer. Because again, I keep getting off the question, but let me go back. What is the authority for saying that the entire moving and unmoving worlds depend upon oneself? The self means the embodied being. It is only after the energy, which was latent in the state of deep sleep, emerges with the idea of I, that all objects are experienced. The self is present in all perceptions as the perceiver. There are no objects to be seen when the I is absent. So see, that's the next step. First, you awaken to the self. You awaken to seeing yourself as the consciousness that is all things. But then, there's another step. There are no objects to be seen when the I is absent. For all these reasons, it may undoubtedly be said that everything comes out of the self and goes back into the self. So consciousness itself is the, you know, if we're going to use the word cause, is the cause of the world. That which is before consciousness is not the cause of the world, which is why A Course in Miracles says something like God did not create the world. Let me just read this next question. It looks short. Let's see if we can do it in 5 minutes or if I have to postpone it. Number 6. As the bodies and the selves animating them are everywhere, actually observed to be innumerable, how can it be said that the self is only one? Okay, that's a good question. As the bodies and the selves animating themselves are everywhere, actually observed to be innumerable, how can it be said that the self is only one? You know, there's lots of people, lots of cockroaches, lots of birds, lots of, you know, I mean, my God, you know, I couldn't even mention them all. How can we say that there's one? That's the question. The answer. If the idea I am the body is accepted, the selves are multiple. The state in which this idea vanishes is the self. Since in that state, there are no other objects. It is for this reason that the self is regarded as one only. So when you awaken to consciousness as I, then everything is me. But again, that's not the last step, because that's still the beingness, isness, existence, sense. But you no longer see I as the body. It's I, consciousness. As I mentioned to you all a while ago and maybe demonstrated for some of you, the consciousness that is looking through these eyes is exactly the same one as the consciousness looking through your eyes. I know that because this consciousness was the same for the apple. There was no change in the consciousness of I as the apple and the consciousness of I as Regina. There is one consciousness. Apparently shining through many sentient beings, but one consciousness. And when we awaken to consciousness, we awaken to that. And we no longer see many. We still see the forms. The senses still see the forms. But the understanding is of the one consciousness. And it's not just an intellectual understanding. It's an understanding. A knowing. We have 3 minutes. Let's do another question. What is the authority for saying that Brahman can be apprehended by the mind and at the same time it cannot be apprehended by the mind? Answer, it cannot be apprehended by the impure mind, but it can be apprehended by the pure mind. So another way of saying this is one that still is caught up in ego is not genuinely aware of I am everything. They may know those words. They may have learned those words in a book. But they are not genuinely aware of themselves as consciousness. And so they are not genuinely aware of I am everything. But the one who has let go of ego, ceased to believe ego, ceased to identify with ego, and is awakened to consciousness as what I am, that is still a sense of existence, still a, we could call it mind, a pure mind is the word that's being used here. It is not beyond sense of existence, sense of self. It's called true self, but it's not beyond sense of self, sense of existence, sense of presence, sense of beingness. It's not beyond that yet. But it sees everything as itself. So again, what is the authority for saying that Brahman can be apprehended by the mind and at the same time that it cannot be apprehended by the mind? And the answer is it cannot be apprehended by the impure mind, or I would call that the ego mind, but it can be apprehended by the pure mind. We could call that the right mind, or some people might call it the awakened mind. If you accept that there's another awakening beyond that, that awakening beyond that is what Michael Langford would refer to as manonasa or no mind, right? No sense of existence, no sense of beingness, no sense of self, no mind. These words are all identifying the same thing, and they all go beyond consciousness to the absolute. And with that, my time is up. So next week, we'll look at the next question. Thank you for hanging out with me, and I'm releasing the mic.